Hey there, this is Ryan on Season 2, Episode 21 of Builder. Today's episode is brought to you by V1, the fastest and easiest way to build no-code apps and automations, build consumer-facing apps, internal tools, or automate your business with just a few clicks. Start using it today at yourv1.com. So today marks a very special day, our first ever Web3-focused episode, pivoting more so from just no-code to more of like the future of tech itself. So joining me, we have a very special guest here to tell us what they're working on and their story, Itai Svidler. What's up, Itai?
Hey, Ryan. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. It was great talking with you the first time we spoke, and I knew I wanted to have you on as like the kickoff episode, so I'm really excited to dive into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
So just a little background for everyone. You're obviously an amazing builder. You currently are the co-CEO of Den and co-founder of Sheetfighter, which is an NFT project. And then before that, you were previously on the core team of the notorious Constitution DAO. Is that all correct?
Yep, that is exactly it. Those are the main things that I've been involved with that a lot of people would know at this point.
Amazing, yeah. So I would love to start then with like a quick background on you. You've been building in this space for a while. I'd love to know like what is your origin story and like how did that get you into the space?
Sure. So I grew up programming. One of my best friends and I, we kind of picked it up in middle school when really what we wanted to do was actually hack the video games we played. Specifically two of them, you know, RuneScape and Habbo Hotel. And that sort of started my journey in software. So fast forward to college, I attended the University of Michigan in the College of Engineering, where I was getting two engineering degrees, one in computer science and one in data science. So I still knew that I wanted to do something in software, but I realized that I really wanted to do something entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going to work as a summer analyst at a local VC shop in Michigan. And when I was there, I was exposed to all sorts of different startups, different tech. And one thing that came across our desk was actually Ethereum. And at the time, we were so naive. This was, I want to say, summer of 2016 or 2017, somewhere back then. And I was still in school, and we were so naive that at the time, you know, no one knew what Ethereum really was in the mainstream. I actually thought it was a startup we could invest in. So being the tech guy, I dove in, and pretty quickly I figured out how big this was. I realized this wasn't, you know, a software as a service product. This was a protocol. And from my software background, as a programmer, I realized how big it was to have this decentralized computer. So I really don't think of Ethereum as money, as a digital currency. I really see it as almost a decentralized AWS.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that was really how I figured it out. In college, right after that, I came back entering, I think, my junior year, and I started doing what we used to call blockchain consulting with a fellow student, which was really fancy terminology because we were in college, we needed to make it fancy for freelance smart contract development. And at that time I started mining Ether at the same time. And that's what kicked it off, really.
That's amazing. So that's a few questions from that. The first question being, did you guys end up investing in Ethereum back in 2016, 2017?
The VC fund? No, we did not.
But you?
I did in the form of starting to mine.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. I was curious, like after you realized its potential, if that was something that you were interested in. And so, you know, looking back at it now, back in 2016, 2017, has it fleshed out the way that you anticipated it would, or did you have any kind of predictions back then that you thought would come true that did or didn't?
I guess... that's a good question. So what I knew back then was that fast forward 5 to 10 years, adoption would be orders of magnitude higher than it was at the time,
gotcha,
which turned out to be true. And I think that was my main thesis, mm-hmm, was I just realized here's just an entirely new way of doing computing. You know, as a software engineer, I write software and I need some machine to run it. Like, it can't run on a rock. And so you could, you know, build that machine yourself, which is what companies used to do in the 90s. You know, they would build their own servers to run that software. Then cloud computing came along, but then Ethereum came along, which was a whole new, almost sort of decentralized cloud computing. So I knew it would be big because of the huge implications. I knew that it would get a lot more adoption. And it's kind of surreal to like be, you know, in 2022 and look back, and I still think it has quite a way to go, but it's kind of surreal to see how far it's come in the meantime.
Yeah, that was going to be my next follow-up question, which was like, how much larger do you see it getting? It's actually funny that you bring this up. It was like a similar story, Anne from Floodgate. She was talking about how the founders of Solana like came to her with whenever they just had a white paper, they hadn't built anything yet, and that was like a pretty interesting story. So yeah, that's really cool. So you go from there, you do smart contract development or blockchain consulting. As the uni kids say, time goes on and now you're working with the Constitution DAO. And so, I mean, a lot of people know what the Constitution DAO is, but for those that don't, at a macro level, could you just describe what that is briefly?
Yeah. So Constitution DAO was, you know, this almost grand internet experience where a group of, if you read the headlines, crypto investors, quote unquote, banded together to raise as much money as they could to buy the US Constitution. There are 13 original copies, and one copy was going on sale at auction at Sotheby's. And, you know, it started off as a joke, you know, let's see if we can try to buy this, form a DAO to try to buy this. And then after our first call, you know, it became pretty clear, you know, about half of us on the first call were deadly serious, while half were still joking.
Yeah.
And the deadly serious crowd that really wanted to try to pursue this won out. And then things kind of took off from there.
That's amazing. So, I mean, I guess to like start with that, you know, who, like, how did you just like for this call, was it just like random people that you guys knew in the crypto space and you're like organized this call, like almost like the story of Zuckerberg, like calling those like kids into his dorm room and only a few showed up to start building Facebook? Was it something of the sort?
So I guess kind of from my perspective, what was happening was, I remember, I'm pretty sure it was a Thursday night, I was going to bed. And I was just doing that one last text message, email check before I went lights out. And I saw my cell phone just popping off. Notifications were going crazy. And it was a Twitter DM group. And I think this Twitter DM group is sort of, you know, a lot of people have heard about this at this point. So I was added by my now co-founder, Jonah, my co-founder for Den. And so he added me, and the group chat was about, you know, five or six people big at the time when I was in there. And we were talking about buying the Constitution. Pretty quickly the next day, the group chat elected to have a Zoom call. And that's when everyone hopped in.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And so for those that don't know the rest of the story, how did that pan out for you guys? Did you end up with the Constitution?
So that was the craziest week of all of our lives. So we did not end up with the Constitution, just to jump to the punchline. We raised over $40 million in ETH at the current price of ETH at the time. You know, that changes all the time. And we lost by a hair, and we lost to the Citadel founder and CEO, Ken Griffin.
Gotcha. Yep. So I actually don't know the answer to this question. What ended up happening to the 40 million?
What ended up happening to the 40 million was it was refunded.
Gotcha.
So we used a provider called Juicebox. And we used them for two reasons. One, for the sake of speed. You know, this all happened over the course of 1 week. Raised all that money that quickly, team banded together, and went to auction that fast. Yeah. So for the sake of speed, it just didn't make sense for me or someone else on the team to write out smart contracts. You know, we couldn't have audited it. It would have been dangerous and it would have been reckless and slow.
Yeah.
So we used a third-party provider called Juicebox. And the second reason why we use them is because they had built-in guaranteed refund functionality. So in the end, you know, the real idea behind Constitution DAO was we raise all this money and as donations, and the people who donated to the cause would, in the end, if we had won the Constitution, receive a governance token. Mm-hmm. And the governance token wasn't fractional ownership of the Constitution, like the rumor seemed to have spread. Yeah. Really, what the governance token was a way to vote on really what happens to the Constitution. Gotcha. And so what ended up happening was once we had lost, people who had contributed to the cause had two options. One was to get their refund through Juicebox, or the second was to redeem it for that governance token, because there was a big outcry from the community of a lot of people who just loved the project and loved what we were doing and loved what it stood for and wanted it to live on somehow. And wanted us to, you know, have that option of the governance token so that other projects could use it in the future.
That's really awesome. And did you have like a set amount that have people actually kept or like transferred to governance tokens?
I don't know the exact amount. I know it was quite a good amount though.
Interesting. That's pretty cool. And so obviously that was like a pretty hectic week of your life. Was there any like major learnings, takeaways with that? Or
so major learnings or takeaways, the one that always stands out to me, I believe it was Steve Schwartzman in his book. I think I'm attributing it to the right person, but he makes the claim that it's just as hard to do big things as it is to do small things. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe raising a lot of money in this exact application is just as hard as it is to raise a little bit amount of money. So always swing for the fences. So I think one of the big takeaways was definitely that. And I think the other big things is that, you know, stories really bring people together and band resources. And maybe this is a lesson to founders or anyone who wants to do something big, but real big stories, almost kind of outlandish, crazy stories, they work, they sell, they bring people together.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I remember like during the time I was like very confused. I just kept seeing this thing on Twitter where people were trying to buy the Constitution and I was like, interesting. And I really didn't understand it at the time. But now looking back, it's a pretty cool story. And it's honestly a shame you guys didn't win out the Constitution, because that would have made it that much sweeter.
It definitely would have. And you know, what's funny is, I don't think anyone in Constitution DAO, anyone in the core team, thought we would lose the auction until the second it happened. At least I certainly didn't. You know, I remember we, those of us who weren't in New York, like myself, flew out and we gathered in this room and we were watching it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while the rest of the world didn't know which bidder was for which party, we knew, but we weren't allowed to, you know, say anything publicly. And, you know, we thought we would get it until the very last second. So it was a really interesting and kind of crazy wild ride, but I think we're all really happy it happened.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that kind of segues into the next part of your life, which is now you're currently building Den and you have Sheet Fighter. I'd love to start, you know, Den's kind of like the big thing you're working on. I'd love to start with Sheet Fighter, kind of like a brief description of that. And I think I want to dig more into like real applications for NFTs and kind of your views on this space.
Sure. So I'll break that up into two different things. So about Sheet Fighter and then about real applications for NFTs. My real interest is all of this. Again, it's not as cryptocurrency as money. And I think, you know, it's kind of an unfortunate misnomer. Mm-hmm. Although I see why it's the case, I really still see this as a distributed cloud computing platform. Gotcha. And so one of the things I love to do is see how I can push those bounds and do something really technically interesting. And, you know, in some cases, really fun. And Cheat Fighter was the combination of both of those. So what Cheat Fighter is a fully on-chain, blockchain-based game. And your characters are actually sort of these cartoon spreadsheets. And they have different moves. You know, they have an attack move, a defense move, a heal move, a critical move. And they have an HP stat value. And, you know, really visualize actually a cartoon spreadsheet. I mean, that is your character. It is technically an NFT, and it's fully on chain with no centralized parts. There's no link to some centralized server. It's just right there on Ethereum. And some of the interesting parts where, you know, where do we push the bounds of what's technical and interesting was the names of the moves, for example, were all generated by GPT-3. And the challenge was bring GPT-3 data on chain, because that was something, you know, there's four co-founders for Cheat Fighter, and that was something none of us had ever seen done before.
Yeah, that's really awesome. So, you know, what kind of, how does that play in your life, like involving obviously like DEN's your primary thing in terms of like time allocation or just like, you know, focus? How do you do that?
Yeah, I also realize, I didn't answer your second question, which is what do I think the real use case for NFTs? I'll just make that a really quick insert in there,
yeah.
Which is I think when NFTs just represent ownership. Right now, they just represent ownership of digital goods, which is why JPEGs or music or video game characters or items apply really well. But I think the real use case of NFTs are going to be unlocked once there's legal precedence for them representing real world things too, like the title to your house or the deed of your car. I might have switched that up. The deed to your house, the title to your car.
yeah.
And I think that's where it'll get really exciting. And yeah. So the other question you asked, right, was how does Cheat Fighter fit into my life, time allocation, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so Cheat Fighter definitely takes up a good amount of my time. Den, of course, is my main baby, but it's hard to pick between your two children. luckily with Cheat Fighter, you know, we've built out quite an excellent team. You know, we've got Drew, who's our 10x front-end engineer, who's amazing. We've got Dinu, who we just brought on board to help out with smart contract development. And, you know, the rest of the team are these whizzes in media and entertainment and graphics and art and video, which is why the production quality of the entire project is so fun and so amazing. So I've managed to, you know, do both things quite well and really execute on both. And the real way I managed to make them both fit into my life is building really good teams around me. But yeah. I can't take all the credit for building those amazing teams because, you know, the other co-founders had a huge role in that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, you know, obviously you've built this. I mean, it could be like advice or also learnings, but whenever it comes to like launching an NFT project outside of maybe, and you've already kind of touched on this, like building a team is extremely important. Having like high production quality is like really important. I'm curious, are there any other learnings or things that you think are important when launching an NFT project?
I'll say I have a mental model here, but I wouldn't just apply it specifically to NFTs. I just think this is, whenever you're building anything, it is so incredibly important to understand your user and understand your customer. And you need to understand it to a level of, yeah, first principles, but you also need to understand it to a level of pattern recognition. You need to have seen how they experience whatever they're doing that you want to innovate on. You need to have experienced it yourself so many times and so deeply that the neurons just sort of fire in your head to the point really where you become opinionated about it. You should start off incredibly not, but you should understand them so well that you should become opinionated on it. That's something we do with DEN too. And I actually think that's something that helped out with Constitution DAO was we really understood our target audience. And it's different than, you know, asking your customer, for example, you know, what do they want to see? Because if Henry Ford, you know, the classic quip is, you know, if Henry Ford would have asked his customers what they wanted, they would have said faster horses, not cars. So understanding your user deeply is understanding, even when they say one thing, that they really mean the other.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I really like that advice. I think, yeah, that's definitely applicable to a ton of things too. Amazing. So then moving into kind of like the final thing, which you're working on now, Den, whenever you check out the site, there isn't much info. So I will include that as well as the Discord for those that want to get early access. But I'd love for you to quickly dive in to what Den is and kind of, you know, like based on our discussion, like how you kind of came up with that idea in your process for really discovering the problems in that space, I think would be really valuable.
Yeah, real short. Den is providing a fintechified experience mm-hmm. for teams that manage, you know, digital on-chain assets as a team. So mm-hmm. what that means is building and executing transactions on-chain. What most people don't realize is that you don't realize this until you get deep in this world. You mm-hmm. contribute to DAOs, you manage assets as a team, that there is an insane amount of friction to doing really basic operational stuff in Web3 that you don't have in Web2. You know, in Web2, someone in the company wants to sign up for a SaaS product. It's frictionless. You know, you don't even think about it. It just happens.
Yeah.
In Web3, it is nuts. You know, you have your multi-signature wallet. You know, if you have five signers required to confirm a transaction, you now have to go wrangle signatures. Mm-hmm. If you're working in a DAO context, a lot of those people are probably international, so they're in different time zones, so it's hard to get a hold of them when you need it right then. And a lot of people use hardware wallets like Ledgers as their signers for their multi-signature. So when they're actually available, doesn't necessarily mean they're available to sign your transaction because they might be working out of a coffee shop or out of an office and didn't feel like it was safe to bring their ledger with them. So now you have to follow up. And there's this whole coordination nightmare. That's just one aspect of how hard it is to build and execute transactions as a team. And that's really what we're helping companies do. And the way we got there was we just did these things. You know, with Constitution DAO, we had to manage a lot of money as a group and we couldn't mess up. And so we felt the friction there. As a DAO contributor, you know, I did some contributions to Index Co-op, shout out. I love Index Co-op. That was a friction point too. And for SheetFighter, you know, where we're also managing cryptocurrency as a team, that's a friction point. So that's how we got there, was just feeling the pain ourselves firsthand.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I know whenever we talked before, you had mentioned the MOM test. I think that's a really good book as well, and maybe something that people are worthy of looking for. I know specifically in the no-code space, I know like this episode is more focused on Web3, but in the no-code space, something people really struggle with is like, just because, and you probably experienced this to some degree whenever you first started like building things as an engineer, it's like you get really excited and you just want to build random stuff. And you're not entirely so much focused on the problem, rather you're focused on just like building something you think's cool. And so I think, like you said, the MOM test is a really great way of figuring out what actually needs to be built.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I have a really good friend, Ish, mm-hmm. Who is also a founder. And one thing he told me that really sticks with me today, I don't know if I've told him that it still really sticks with me today, but he said, you should avoid writing code as long as possible. Because as soon as you start writing code, mm-hmm. your feedback loop, your iteration loop lengthens like crazy. And it's harder to learn and then change course.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I actually completely agree with that because we just went through this while building Fable, and that was literally the problem. And that's one thing we promised ourselves was that we like just couldn't build anything. And it was painful for like a good week or two because it's easy to feel like you're just like stagnant, you know? But I mean, we were still learning a ton.
Yeah. And that, by the way, that's where no code comes in, right?
Yeah.
No code is a way to build, but you know, maintain your feedback loop at least faster than writing code.
100%. Yeah. Especially, you know, and especially with landing pages, like being able to get a landing page up in like, you know, 5-10 minutes is pretty incredible. The hardest part with that is just like getting the content that you think fits, like you said earlier, the people that you're targeting. That's amazing though. So whenever you're like looking into the future, or I guess it's the opposite, whenever you're like backcasting, do you have any bold predictions for the Web3 space in general, whether that be for commerce, for you know, the way people manage? I mean, obviously DEN is kind of your big bet, but I'm just curious if you have anything that you're backcasting on.
That's a good question. So backcasting, some of the bets I'm obviously doubling down on, I'm only betting my career on it, is that there's going to be this emergent property that comes out of it that we can't really expect, similar to how the internet came along and people realized the incredible implications. You know, all these people could interact with each other, communicate like never before, but they probably didn't predict Facebook or Uber or Airbnb at mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah.
My expectation, and I really backcasting where I see this all going, is over time, really trusted platforms are going to get cheaper and faster to build on. You know, for example, Ethereum is notoriously expensive and slow.
Yep.
But these platforms are going to get really cheap and really fast, which means developers like myself can start building way more interesting things using this decentralized system. And I don't know what'll happen, but I know the implications of that are huge.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a ton of sense. Are there any like major themes that you see in this space that you're particularly interested in? I know one thing that we've talked about, like personally, like our team, is just like the idea of taking like traditionally illiquid things and making them liquid, like startup compensation. You know, Dexterity Labs and Graham, they're working on like the treasury protected token stuff. I'm curious if there's any like major themes that you think Web3 enables that you think is super interesting. And that may be one, that may be it. That may, the liquidity thing may be like something that you're interested in. I'm just curious.
That is a great one. The making illiquid things liquid is obviously a great one. And I do think it serves as a big benefit to society. I think the other one is DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations. You know, Constitution DAO was a DAO. Index Co-op, which I mentioned before, is a DAO. And in an interesting way, there's a new way of organizing people to accomplish tasks, whether it's through new incentive mechanisms where, you know, a lot of DAOs will pay out their contributors in the DAO's native token. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they get something liquid that they can immediately cash out for, you know, USD, if that's how they want to support themselves. But they also have something that buys them in. You know, that token in theory rises with the success of the DAO. So mm-hmm. their incentives are aligned. And on-chain governance starts to open up new ways of organizing ourselves. There's a book that I love called Team of Teams by Stanley McChrystal. And he talks about empowered execution. And he talks about, honestly, kind of decentralized amorphous organizations, although he doesn't really use that terminology. And yeah. You start to see how powerful it is, but in what ways is hard to say again, because it's all about emergent properties. You mm-hmm. can't really predict exactly what'll happen.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no, I completely agree, but that's also what makes it so fun and interesting, right?
Exactly. You never know what'll happen. You never know if a DAO will buy an NBA team or if someone will try to buy the Constitution.
Yeah, you never know. I'm waiting for a DAO to buy a university. And I'd be interested. I've seen Dropout DAO. Did you end up finishing your degree, by the way?
Yeah, I did. So I ended up getting the two engineering degrees, computer science and data science.
Gotcha. Yeah, amazing. Well, Itai, thank you so much for your time today. I'll have all of the links. Where can they find you in terms of like links for DEN and SheetFighter?
Yeah, so DEN is onchainden.com. SheetFighter is sheetfighter.io. And if anyone wants to reach me, best way is probably through Twitter. My handle is just at Itai Spittler.
Amazing. Yeah, I'll have all of those links in the description of this episode, as well as the Discord link for Den, so that way anyone can access it to get access. But yeah, thank you again so much. It was great having you on the pod, and I will see everyone next time on Builders.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan.